The Murder Mystery Podcast. The story unfolds each week. Will you guess the killer?
On the Murder Mystery Podcast, it's the London Connection. Episode 23. After getting a message from someone who refused to give their name, but who did say that they had information that she may find interesting, Greer is not suspicious. She immediately thinks that Evan must have given her details to someone who has more dirt on the local members of Sussex North to further help sway the upcoming vote to make her official party candidate. The WA Bar on Queen's Gate is a 10-minute walk from her house in South Kensington. The mid-morning sky has the merest hint of blue towards the west, and the day is unusually sunny, considering it's only a week before Christmas. She enters the bar and looks around for someone looking expectant, but sees no one who fits that bill. She sits on one of the tall blue chairs that face a large almond-covered marble bar and orders peppermint tea. She doesn't look around the place again. If the person wants to find her, they will. Someone sits down next to her, and Greer turns her head.
Olivia, this is a surprise.
I left you the message.
Of all the people I might have guessed who it was going to be, your name would not have been on the list.
Thank you for coming, begins Olivia. She places an A4 envelope on the bar. I said in my message that I have information I'd like to talk to you about.
And that could be useful for my bid to become an MP.
I didn't say that. Greer's eyes are already narrowed with suspicion, and they narrow further. Olivia flicks open the flap of the envelope, pushes her hand inside and pulls out 4 photo enlargements. She peels them off from the stack one at a time and places each one on the counter in front of Greer. The woman surveys the images, her eyes jumping from one to the other, exploring them in detail. To Olivia's surprise, Greer smiles as she talks.
I hadn't seen these. This is our last afternoon together. We look happy, don't you think?
The response knocks Olivia's pre-prepared question structure off kilter, as she had not planned on this reaction from Greer.
You don't deny the affair, then?
When Greer turns her eyes to Olivia, she can see they're slightly watery.
I loved him,
is all she says. A barman asks Olivia if she wants a drink, and she orders coffee. The interlude creates a useful break in the conversation to allow Olivia to think what she needs to ask now.
Why didn't you say anything before about this?
Greer frowns.
Say anything? To whom? You? Why would I? It could bear on the circumstances of his death. Could it? How? Did something happen between the two of you on that last day? I told you at Surridge Place that discretion is an admirable quality in people,
says Greer.
The man I loved has died. It was a tragic accident. I was planning to leave my husband in the next few weeks and sue for divorce. Steve and I were planning to get married.
He was already married to Claire.
And planning on leaving her,
says Greer.
In fact, he was planning on telling you it was all over on the day he died. I think he was having a drink with you that night, and Miss Hill.
That's right.
And if he'd reached home, he would have told Claire.
Wait a minute, says Olivia.
He was travelling straight home from Brown's Hotel.
Yes.
But he was found at Clapham Junction. That's in the opposite direction. There's no direct route to Hampstead from Mayfair that takes you through Clapham. What are you saying?
That he wasn't going home.
Where is he going then?
I don't know, but your brother talked to him that night.
Evan?
Yes, earlier in the evening. Evan told me.
You know Evan?
He told me he believes Stephen was killed.
He's in hospital, did you know?
Says Greer.
What do you mean? The fire. What fire?
There was a fire in Evan's flat the other night. He's badly burnt. Is that something to do with you?
I didn't know anything about it until you just mentioned it to me.
How do you know Evan?
Says Greer.
I met him.
Greer's face has grown in concern over the last minute.
Why?
No one would tell me the truth.
The truth about what?
Stephen's death by person or persons unknown.
It wasn't an accident,
says Olivia.
The man you loved was mixed up in something. I don't know what, but it was enough to get him killed.
Greer stops and sips her tea. Olivia can tell that she's debating whether to reveal something significant or not.
He needed money,
says Greer eventually.
He was in debt. He'd borrowed from Greenlink accounts and couldn't pay it back.
How did he borrow from Greenlink?
Jeremy agreed to lend it to him.
Why would he do that?
Greer breathes in and out, controlling the breath so it lasts for a few seconds. She raises her hand to the barman, who walks over.
Two brandies, please,
she says, and waits while he pours out the drinks in front of them. Greer picks up the brandy immediately, takes a swig and closes her eyes as the liquid tangs against the side of her throat.
There are some non-executive directors who are not declared,
she says.
And why is that?
They managed a private fund that invests in companies that are owned by various politicians. Investments that those politicians wouldn't want to be associated with.
Investments in what exactly?
The details are always sketchy. Intentionally so. The whole idea is to keep it all under wraps. Was Stephen killed as a consequence of this secret fund?
Pools of moisture cling to the lower waterline of Greer's brown eyes. When she says the words,
I don't know,
they are barely audible. Are you involved, Greer?
I'm not.
How do you know about all of this? And why have you not gone to the police if you're not involved?
They're part of it, the police. There's a guy called Ralph Peters. He covers for them if anything ever turns nasty.
Why have you suddenly told me all of this when you've only ever tried to put me off the scent up till now?
Honestly?
Of course.
Life in politics is only ever about the degree of risk. One puts forward one's views. Some people agree, some people disagree. The art is to get as much of what you want and carry enough people along with you. The real question is, what do you do with those people who don't agree with you? The people who can weaken you in the future? There are only two options, attack or undermine. Greenlink and my association with it, albeit on the margins, has been an advantage. Jeremy's father had helped me put forward my candidacy. The Harwells have given me credibility locally with folks. Soon I won't need them anymore. So, attack or undermine? I can attack them, but they're too established in the world of politics, so my only option is to undermine them. I'd already decided to do something about all of this corruption before today. You just happened to come along with your photos and remind me about the man I loved. I'm not a robot, Olivia, underneath it all. Stephen meant something to me. He was part of my plan for the future. I'll find another man, of course. But I did love him. So making them pay for his death, whether they were involved directly or indirectly, will make me happy.
Is it only about looking after number one?
That's all it ever is,
says Greer. The women pause their conversation and both take gulps of brandy as they let their minds roll through the ideas they've talked about. They both think about how this changes the landscape of what is going to happen.
I'm going to see your brother. I need to hear his point of view.
He's not involved as far as I know.
But what are you going to do about Greenlink?
Says Olivia.
Use it to my advantage.
The woman smiles at Olivia.
You think I'm mercenary?
Yes.
Just surviving, Olivia.
Before visiting the hospital, Olivia is booked to attend a legal seminar. Even though it is the last place she wants to be, she committed to attend, as there are relevant sessions on changes to the procurement process for large public contracts that she needs to be up to speed on, as it will affect the work she's being paid for. Her taxi pulls up outside Central Hall in Westminster. She walks into the vast entrance and up the curved staircase to the first floor and takes a seat in the front row of the upper balcony. The woman on the door handed her a programme of the speakers, and Olivia scans through the list, noting the key people she came to hear. As it turns out, the important talks are after lunch, and there's nothing worth hearing before then. Her eyes track across the immediate next sessions. There is coffee in 5 minutes, then a session about judicial reviews, their place in legal practice. Then, she sees a name she recognises. The speaker for that session is Patricia Harwell. Olivia immediately gets up and goes to find the coffee area. As she thought, Patricia is sitting alone at one end of the room, reading through her slide deck in preparation for the session.
"Hello, Patricia,"
says Olivia, once she reaches within a few feet of the woman.
"Olivia, have you come to see my talk?"
"Yes, I thought it might be interesting.
Are you busy? Or can you chat?"
"Yes, fine. I was going through my slides to fill in time."
Olivia sits next to her on the sofa.
"How's Claire?"
"Out tomorrow, actually. I went down a few days ago. She was making great recovery."
"Claire was saying how much she loves the relationship she has with you,"
says Olivia, starting to tiptoe across the minefield.
"I had a long chat with her about the events of 15 years ago. And you were the one person," she said, "who helped pull her through."
Patricia is suddenly listening more intently. It's now or never, thinks Olivia.
"Did you know her mother?"
"I didn't."
The woman's voice has taken on mild frostiness.
"A lovely woman, apparently."
"Hmm. Claire still has photos of her."
"Yes."
"And what a tragedy to die so young,"
says Olivia.
"What was she, in her 30s?
The conference is broken up for the coffee break, and ones and twos, then dozens of people, start to flood into the refreshment room.
"I believe so. I really do need to talk to a couple of people before my session."
"Do you know how Jennifer died?"
"I can't help you, I'm sorry."
"Was she Miss J, Patricia?"
Patricia stands.
"Good to see you again, Olivia."
Olivia stands too.
"Was Jennifer Peters Miss J, Patricia? The woman who died 15 years ago?" "I must dash. Should the case be reopened, my lady?"
says Olivia, using the in-court murder address for a High Court judge. Patricia stops and looks at the floor.
"There may be new evidence in Claire's belongings."
Patricia says nothing more. Her eyes flick momentarily to Olivia's. Then she walks away, across the room. Jeremy lies next to Violet in the bed, and she pulls the covers over them.
"I don't know what I'd do without you," he says.
"Good. I like you being dependent on me."
She drapes a long arm across his chest. He turns to her and kisses her on the forehead, and they smirk quietly to each other.
"I have the evidence about your father on the way."
"What evidence?"
"Documents from the private files in Greenlink."
"How did you get that?"
he says.
"I have my ways, and I've lined up a journal to publish them."
"You have been busy."
"Just protecting you, darling."
He turns to her.
"Yes, you are. Thank you."
"It may be published as soon as tomorrow."
"Okay. Have you got a plan B in case your source doesn't cough up?"
"I always have a plan B,"
says Violet. The lift inside the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital takes Olivia to the third floor. She follows the signs for the burns unit and asks a nurse at the reception desk which bed Evan Rice is in. The woman directs her to the last bed on the ward. Olivia walks up and dumps her coat on a plastic chair next to his bed. Evan is lying on his back, with bandages covering the top half of his face, both his shoulders, and all down the left-hand side of his chest. His eyes are closed, but the nurse has said that he sleeps a lot, and Olivia is welcome to try and get him to talk, but don't expect him to be able to have the energy for much conversation yet. She leans over him and inspects the damage that is not bandaged. There are red marks that disappear under the white fabric, almost everywhere, across the skin that remains exposed. Olivia waits for a few minutes to see if he wakes, but Evan doesn't stir. She leans back over him and whispers his name. No reaction, not even an eyelid flutter. She says his name again, this time mildly louder. And he does react. She can see his eyes moving under the lids. Then he opens them.
Mr. Laney.
Mr. Rice, I came to see you. He keeps his eyes open and looks at her face, tracing the outline and the details of her features. Can you talk? He makes a quiet affirmative sound. Was this an accident, Mr. Rice? His eyes are still, looking at her face. He says something she can't hear clearly. Olivia leans closer to his mouth.
No,
he says.
Someone did it on purpose.
Affirmative grunt again. But his consciousness is ebbing, and his eyelids flutter.
Who?
She says.
Boyd. Mr. Boyd. Stephen Boyd.
His eyes are closed now. Evan doesn't make an affirmative grunt this time. Olivia looks up at the monitors next to the bed. The heart rate trace is still flicking up and down as the light works across the glass.
Mr. Rice.
No response. What could he have meant? Stephen Boyd had set the fire in the flat. It doesn't make sense. And Olivia concludes that the delirium is still spinning around inside his head. She is frustrated that he couldn't say more. And what he did say was nonsense. She waits for a few minutes to see if he regains consciousness. And she says his name a few times. But there's no reaction now. She goes back to the nursing station and reports what has happened in case it's important. But the staff say it's typical at this stage of recovery. Olivia makes her way out of the building and onto the Fulham Road, then cuts down Beaufort Street and onto the King's Road. She starts to walk east through Chelsea. Olivia can't get Claire's diary out of her mind. Those teenage notes lay out the events of 15 years ago in an entirely different light. If Claire saw anything back then, anything that is incriminating, then Patricia's defensiveness earlier today at the conference makes sense. She had been keen to keep anything that had been hidden away back then firmly under the carpet. But without a testimony from Claire, there's no new evidence and the case will not be reopened by a judge. So talking to Claire, as soon as she's out of hospital, is now critical.